peered through the dark glass at the empty kitchen. Light spilled from a doorway that led into the living room. Then he waited, listening. The sound of a television blared through the house. TJ and his wife must be stone deaf. He circled around the back and opposite side of the house, giving each window a cautious look and getting a general layout of the interior. In addition to the main living area in the front of the house, he noted a kitchen and three bedrooms. The second bedroom had been converted into an office. Children's furniture and toys decorated the third. Grandchildren? The rear door had 9 panes of glass in the top half. He could see straight through into the living room. 2 gray heads were visible over the back of the sofa. An old man would not be able to put up much of a fight. An elderly woman didn't pose much of a threat either. He eyed the flashlight in his hand. It would be just as easy to bash them both over the head. But impulsive behavior is what got him into this mess. He couldn't take the chance that one of them would have time to call for help. With 2 targets, he had to be quick. Besides, there was no one around to hear a gunshot. He put a gloved hand on the doorknob. It turned. Clearly, PJ and his wife didn't think there was a need to keep their doors locked in the middle of the country. Normally, they'd be right. Just not tonight. Pushing the door open, he stepped over the threshold and crept down the short hallway, past a laundry room and half bath. In the next doorway, he peered around the molding. Neither gray head had moved, and the television would cover any sound of his footsteps. He walked closer, pulling his gun from his pocket, easing each foot forward, his steps silent on the carpet. The woman was bent over a crossword puzzle. PJ aimed the remote at the screen and surfed channels until he came to a news station. The old man's hand shook. Could he even stand up? His pale blue shirt and jeans bagged on a skinny frame. His flesh sunk into his cheeks, as if he was already halfway to being a corpse. The old woman was equally frail. She couldn't weigh 100 pounds. PJ's wife suddenly froze and turned her head. He hadn't made any noise. She must have sensed him. She jumped to her feet, opened her mouth, and screamed. PJ stumbled to his feet and pointed one arthritic, shaky finger at him.
Stop right there!
The old man squinted at him.
I know you.
Most people hesitated before killing another human being. But not him. He didn't hesitate for a millisecond. He aimed at the old man and pulled the trigger. A red spot bloomed across the pale blue shirt. The old man dropped to his knees.
No!
The old woman shrieked. She lunged to her husband's side. Sobbing, she pressed her hands over the bullet wound. Disbelief wiped her face clean of expression as she looked up at him, blinking, crying, not comprehending what had happened. She wasn't on his list, but he could hardly let her go. Before she could get over her initial shock, he pulled the trigger again and shot her in the face. Blood and brains sprayed across the carpet. She slumped sideways over the body of her husband. He walked closer, checking the man's pulse first, then the woman's. Both were good and dead. He crossed more names off his mental list. Now to finish setting the scene. The diamond on the woman's engagement ring was a decent size. He pried it off her finger and dropped it in the pillowcase. Then he stepped over the bodies and went into the bedroom. On the dresser, he lifted the jewelry box and dumped it into his bag. Moving faster now, he went to the nightstand and emptied the old man's wallet, leaving the leather billfold empty and open. He returned to the living room, turned out the contents of a desk, and found a small stack of cash. Leaving the drawer upside down on the carpet, he shoved the money into the pillowcase. He passed on an iPad and laptop. He wanted no part of anything that was GPS-equipped. He opened more drawers, leaving them hanging open with their contents draping over the edges. Then he moved on to the kitchen. The sound of a car door slamming stopped him cold. Someone was outside. He set down the pillowcase by the back door and crept to the living room window, peering around the frame. A shadow walked up the front path. Chapter 25. Sharp parked in front of P.J. Houlihan's little house in Gray Hollow. After his stroke 3 years before, P.J. Houlihan and his wife had moved to this compact rancher. According to his son, P.J. needed one floor, but the Houlihans were country people. A senior community just would not do. They needed the calm and quiet of having their own land around them. He disconnected his phone from the car charger. The battery had barely charged. He stuffed it in his pocket. Maybe the connection had been loose. Sharp went up the walk and knocked on the front door. No one answered. Sharp turned and scanned the front yard. A small sedan sat in the driveway. The hairs on the back of Sharp's neck quivered. Cupping his hand over his eyes, he peered through the narrow window next to the door. In between the sofa and TV, two bodies were sprawled. Dark spots arced away from the bodies on the carpet. No. Pulling out his phone, he called 911. Cognizant of the crime scene, Sharp pulled gloves out of his pocket and tugged them onto his hands. He tried the doorknob and nearly fell inside when the door opened. He'd been a cop for 25 years, but he flinched when he got an up-close and personal look at the living room. PJ stared up at the ceiling. He'd been shot dead center in the chest. But his wife. She was lying across her husband's belly. Half her face was gone. Bits of bone and blood had been sprayed across the pale carpet. Bloody matter spattered across the television screen. Sharp crouched next to the bodies. Pulling off a glove, he pressed his fingertips to PJ's neck, then checked his wife for a pulse. Both were dead, but just barely. Their hearts weren't pumping blood from their wounds, but gravity was still at work. Blood oozed from Mrs. Houlihan's face. PJ must have died quickly. His chest wound hadn't bled much. Was the shooter still close by? Sharp's mind spun. Whoever had shot these poor people didn't want PJ to talk about Mary. Why? Probably because the shooter had killed Mary. Had he killed Vic, too? Sharp scanned the room, taking in the upended drawers and general ransacked appearance. This was no burglary. Sharp wasn't buying the cover-up for a second. A shadow moved outside the window. The shooter had gone out the back door and circled around. Sharp crept to the door. The man outside could be the key to the 23-year-old mystery that had ruined two lives and consumed Sharp's career. He eased the door open a few inches and peered through the gap. The figure had reached a line of decorative trees planted on what Sharp assumed was the property line. He must have a vehicle stashed somewhere. And if he had a vehicle, maybe it could be used to identify him. Sharp slipped out the door, pushing it almost closed behind him. Straining his eyes in the dark, he searched for the figure in the shadows but saw nothing. Crouching low, he jogged across the grass toward the trees. If he could just get a look at the guy, or his car, or his license plate. Anything. If Sharp stopped to call the sheriff, the shooter would be long gone before help came. Sharp reached the trees. Hiding behind a mature pine, he peered around the trunk, but still saw no one. Had the shooter gotten away? Sharp listened for the sound of an engine, but all he heard was the wind rustling in the treetops and the hammering of his own heart. Somewhere out there was a killer with a gun he wasn't afraid to use. A killer who needed to be stopped. Sharp stole across 10 feet of open space to the next tree. This one wasn't quite wide enough to provide adequate cover. He didn't waste time behind it, but jogged toward the next one. 30 feet away, a figure stepped out from behind a tree. A gun fired with a small burst of orange light. A flash of searing pain hit Sharp's arm. He dove to the ground, rolling behind a tree. Panting, he glanced around the trunk and saw the black-clad figure disappear into a deeper woods. A few seconds later, an engine started and he heard a vehicle driving away. Rolling to his back, Sharp pressed a hand over his bicep. Blood welled between his fingers. Shit. He climbed to his feet and walked back to his car to wait. After digging out his first aid kit from the trunk of his car, he removed his ruined jacket and cut the sleeve from his shirt. The bullet had grazed his bicep. He needed stitches, but he wouldn't bleed to death anytime soon. He doused the bloody furrow with antiseptic, which felt like he'd soaked his arm with gasoline and lit it with a match. He opened his car door, sat sideways on the seat, and put his head between his knees. When the ground stopped tilting, he sat up and covered the wound with a bandage. Deputies arrived, one by one. 30 minutes later, the sheriff still hadn't made an appearance. Maybe he'd get lucky. Maybe Sheriff King wasn't available. The sheriff was spread thinly this week. He couldn't be everywhere. Sharp was feeling good about the possibility as the responding deputy took his statement. Another 15 minutes later, the sound of a vehicle approaching caught his attention. The sheriff's car, parked in the road. Sharp gritted his teeth. His arm throbbed. He was not in the mood to deal with Sheriff King. King stomped across the road, put his hand on his hips, and leaned in at Sharp.
What are you doing here, Sharp?
Sharp shrugged.
I came to ask PJ some questions about Mary.
He glanced at the medical examiner's van parked at the curb.
Seems like someone didn't want PJ to talk.
Sheriff King jabbed a finger at Sharp's nose.
Don't go anywhere.
Sharp leaned on his car, folded his arms across his chest, and waited. His bicep burned like someone was holding it over a bonfire. 20 minutes later, the sheriff walked out of the house, tugging off his gloves.
I was supposed to interview PJ in the morning.
The sheriff glared.
Tell me everything that happened.
Sharp gave his statement again.
Let me get this straight. You are not armed, yet you followed the shooter.
The sheriff shook his head.
Yeah.
In hindsight, that hadn't been a shining moment for Sharp's common sense.
Adrenaline got the better of me.
And anger and desperation. He'd been after this man for more than 2 decades. Tonight, he'd been obsessed with getting him, the man who'd killed Mary and Crystal, and maybe Vic, too.
What did the shooter look like?
King asked.
I don't know. It was dark. He was dressed in loose black clothes and a hat. His face was covered with a ski mask. He was too far away for me to get an accurate height or size. He was average to tall, thin to normal weight. The best you can do is average to tall in dark clothes and not fat. Yes.
Sharp ran the chase through his mind again.
Have you discovered anything about Mary that PJ could have known? Something important enough to have gotten her killed?
Sheriff King glared.
I'm not going to share information about an active homicide investigation. This is my case. Stay out of it. Mary Fox's death is tied to Vic Krueger's disappearance,
Sharp said. His arm throbbed with its own heartbeat, and if he didn't lie down soon, he might throw up. The sheriff spun around and took 2 steps in the opposite direction. He propped his hands on his hips and bowed his head. His posture all give me strength. His entire torso inflated and deflated with a huge breath. He turned to face Sharp again.
If you get in my way, you and Krueger will both end up in a cell on impeding an investigation charges. We haven't impeded your investigation at all.
The pain in Sharp's arm took the heat out of his argument, and he was starting to feel lightheaded.
Don't you want to know why PJ Houlihan and his wife were murdered before you had a chance to talk to him about Mary Fox?
The sheriff's answer was an angry huff and glare.
You look like you're gonna pass out. Do you need an ambulance?
No.
Which was a stupid thing to say. Of course he did. King rolled his eyes.
Well, you can't drive yourself to the hospital. Give me 5 minutes. I'll get a deputy to drive your ass to the ER.
Thanks,
Sharp said grudgingly.
Leave your keys in your vehicle in case we need to move it.
The sheriff stomped away. Sharp wanted to protest, but he didn't. He was in enough trouble with the sheriff. No one was going to steal his vehicle from an active crime scene. While he waited, Sharp called Lance.
Where are you?
Sharp asked.
Just left hockey practice. I'm on my way to the roadside motel.
Lance answered.
Somebody shot PJ and his wife.
Sharp summed up the last hour,
A bullet grazed my arm. I'm getting a ride to the hospital. You were shot?
Lance shouted. Sharp lifted the phone away from his ear.
It's just a scratch. Scratches don't need to be treated at the hospital.
I need a couple of stitches.
Sharp admitted.
And a clean shirt.
I'm on my way.
Under Lance's voice was the sound of tires grating on a road. An engine accelerated. Wherever he was, Lance was turning around.
I'll meet you at the ER.
Sharp ended the call. A deputy waved him over to a patrol vehicle. Sharp got into the passenger seat. He stared out the side window all the way to the hospital. What had PJ known? Chapter 26. Lance pulled the ER curtain aside. Once he saw Sharp sitting up on the gurney, Lance breathed easier. A nurse was wrapping a bandage around Sharp's bicep.
What's the damage?
Lance set the clean shirt he'd brought on the gurney.
15 stitches.
The nurse taped the gauze down and stepped away to strip off her blue gloves.
I'll be back with your discharge paperwork.
Wincing, Sharp reached for a shirt. Lance reached over and pulled the shirt over his arm and shoulder. Then he helped him into his black fleece jacket.
Thanks.
Sharp picked at the hole in his jacket sleeve.
That could have been your head.
Lance said.
I know. I'm sorry.
Now what happened?
Lance asked. Sharp told him about finding PJ and his wife dead, chasing the killer and getting shot. By the time he'd finished the story, the nurse had returned.
The stitches should come out in 7 to 10 days.
She handed Sharp a pile of papers. There's a prescription for pain medication in there. Tucking the folded paper into his pocket, Sharp slid off the gurney. His movements were slow and stiff, not at all like his usual bouncy, energetic gait. He obviously hurt more than he would admit. He could have been killed. If the bullet had struck him a few inches to the side, he'd have a sucking chest wound instead of a minor graze. Lance rubbed a knot just below his breastbone. Sharp had never been shot. He was freakishly healthy. He'd never even been in a fender bender. To Lance, he'd always seemed invincible. But even Sharp's impressive physical condition couldn't hide the fact that he wasn't Superman. Bullets were everyone's kryptonite. They walked out to the Jeep.
I need to go get my car,
Sharp said. Lance shook his head.
Tomorrow. You shouldn't drive tonight.
He felt, rather than saw, Sharp roll his eyes.
I'm okay, Lance.
I know.
Lance drove toward the office. Sharp shook his head.
Let's drive out to the roadside motel.
Sharp leaned on the headrest and closed his eyes. Lance kept the car on course.
We're stopping at the office so you can pick up your gun. I know you don't like guns, but if someone shoots at you, you should be able to shoot back. You're right.
Sharp sighed. Lance pulled up in front of the office. Sharp's Prius was parked in the driveway.
How did my car get here?
Sharp asked.
The sheriff must have had someone drop it off.
Damn it.
Sharp smacked the armrest.
Just when I want to foster a deep hatred for that man. He does something decent.
Lance pulled up to the curb. Sharp got out of the vehicle, stopped at the Prius to collect the key, and went up the exterior staircase to his apartment. He came back a few minutes later wearing his sidearm and a jacket without a bullet hole.
Are you sure you want to come along to the roadside motel?
Lance asked as Sharp climbed into the passenger seat.
You're not moving with your usual grace. I'm fine.
Sharp grunted and checked his watch.
Let's get to it.
Before Lance could pull away from the curb, his phone vibrated. He didn't recognize the number of the caller. He pressed answer.
Kruger. Lance?
A male voice asked.
Yes?
Lance put the Jeep into drive.
This is Kevin Monroe, your mom's friend.
Kevin? Alarmed, Lance shifted back to park.
What's going on? I'm worried about Jenny.
Kevin's voice rose in pitch.
We talk every evening. I've messaged her 3 times and called her 2 times. She hasn't answered. She always returns my messages within 20 minutes or so.
Maybe she's working.
But even as Lance said it, he knew the argument didn't hold water. His mom spent most of her day online. She worked online. If she received 3 messages from Kevin, she would have messaged him back.
I don't know,
Kevin said. He sounded anxious.
I'll go check on her, right now.
Lance turned the Jeep around.
You'll let me know?
Kevin asked.
Of course.
Lance stepped on the accelerator. He ended the call. Sharp was already on his phone. He shook his head.
She isn't answering.
Lance pressed his foot down harder. His mother always answered Sharp's calls.
She could be meditating or doing yoga.
Sharp grabbed the armrest as Lance made a quick turn.
Maybe.
But neither one of them believed it. His mom was too predictable, too routine-oriented. He cut 3 minutes off the drive, his heart racing faster than the Jeep's engine. Sharp dialed her number 2 times more, but no one picked up either call. Lance roared into the driveway. He had the vehicle door open before the Jeep was in park. They raced to the front door. Lance turned his key in the lock and shoved open the door. From the foyer, he could see into the empty, dark living room. His mother's home was quiet. Not unusual. She spent most of her waking hours in her office at the back of the house. But beneath the absence of sound lay a disturbing stillness that stirred the hairs on the back of his neck. Something was wrong. Very wrong. He started down the hallway, dread bawling up in his gut.
Mom?
Silence ticked by, punctuated by the hum of the refrigerator and the echo of his heartbeat in his ears. Sharp was right behind him, calling for his mom, his steps quickening as if he felt it too.
Jenny?
With panic tightening his lungs, Lance entered the kitchen. The tidy room was empty, but 1 chair was pushed away from the table.
Mom?
Lance's voice rose with his apprehension as he continued into the short corridor that led to the bedrooms. His mother's office had once been the 3rd bedroom. The desk light was on, but the computer monitors were dark. Lance emerged from the office and turned toward his mother's bedroom. The door was closed, a thin strip of light showing at its base. He knocked. Maybe she'd been in the shower. But even as the thought passed through his mind, he rejected it. His mother showered in the morning. Jennifer Kruger didn't just decide to alter her personal routine on a whim. He knocked on the door.
Mom? It's Lance. Open the door.
He curled his knuckles and banged again, harder. Nothing.
I'm coming in,
he shouted. Sweat dampened the back of his shirt. The door was locked. He ran his hand along the top of the door frame where the simple cylindrical interior door keys had been kept since he was a boy. He found the key and used it to pop the push-button lock. The door opened. The bedroom was empty. With Sharp close on his heels, Lance moved quickly across the carpet to the closed door of the master bathroom. He banged just once, then tried the door. The knob didn't give. He unlocked the door and pushed. The door cracked a few inches and stopped. Something was blocking it.
Mom!
Lance pushed against the door enough to get his head inside. Not something. His mother. She lay on the floor, curled in a fetal position. Her legs on the bath mat, her torso and face on the tile. Her face was turned away from him, but her body was still, and her skin matched the bone-colored tiles. He froze for 1/2 of a second, his heart stuttering, his gaze on a ribcage watching for respirations. But he saw none. She couldn't be dead. She couldn't. Sharp called 911 while Lance muscled the door open enough to squeeze through sideways. Dropping to 1 knee, he rested 2 shaking fingers on his mother's neck. Her pulse beat in a weak rhythm against his fingertips, and he caught the faint movement of her ribs as she took a shallow breath. Relief rushed through him like a fighter jet.
She's alive.
Sharp gave the dispatcher the address and requested paramedics and an ambulance. Then he climbed over her and crouched on the other side of her body in the small bathroom. Lance took her pulse and counted her respirations before moving her legs and opening the door all the way. Grabbing the blanket from her bed, he draped it over her.
Maybe she fell and hit her head.
Sharp ran a gentle hand over her scalp.
I don't feel any bumps or blood, but that doesn't mean much.
Lance stood and scanned the bathroom. When he'd first rushed in, he'd only seen her body. Now his gaze locked onto the sink and the two orange prescription bottles in the white bowl. Both open. Both empty.
No. She wouldn't.
His gaze tracked back to his mother's face. Sharp had followed Lance's gaze. He was tough, but his face paled as he took in the empty bottles. Lance dropped to his knees.
Oh, Mom.
He bowed his head and put a hand on her forehead, then brushed a lock of hair away from her face. She didn't react. Her eyelids didn't even flutter.
I didn't see this coming.
Sharp grabbed his arm.
This is not your fault.
I know. Lance took her hand in one of his. Her fingers were cold. He tugged the blanket over her shoulders, then checked her pulse and respirations again.
She seemed all right when I left her earlier. How could I have completely missed the signs? I was just here a few hours ago. She's breathing,
Sharp said.
Don't count her out.
Her heart rate was the same, but her respirations had slowed. He counted her breaths and kept his fingers on her pulse point, ready to start CPR the instant her breathing ceased or her heart stopped beating. Time seemed to tick by in slow motion. Even with his mother's long and troubled history, he still couldn't believe she'd try to kill herself. 10 minutes later, sirens approached. Lance went to the door and let the paramedics in. They rushed the gurney into the bedroom and left it, just outside the bathroom while they assessed his mother. Lance stood outside the door, hands curled into frustrated fists at his sides. Sharp put his hand on Lance's shoulder, pulling him backward.
Give them some room.
The medics took her vital signs and started an IV, their rapid efficiency projecting the severity of the situation. One injected something into the IV line. Sharp scrubbed a hand across the top of his head. Disbelief creased his face.
This doesn't seem like your mom. Even when she's been self-destructive, she's never been suicidal. In fact, when her anxiety takes over, she isn't thinking clearly enough to do anything except crawl into a dark place. I don't know what to think,
Lance said. Exactly what did she take? One of the paramedics asked.
The bottles are in the sink,
Lance said.
One's for depression, she takes the other for anxiety and panic attacks. I had just refilled them last week, so the bottles were nearly full. The anxiety medication is relatively new.
Once she took several more medications, but the new drug seemed to take the place of several of her old ones. Lance dropped his head and hooked a hand around the back of his neck. Sharp frowned.
Are you okay?
Yeah. But Lance didn't know how he felt. His body was numb, but there was also pain. Pain buried so deep in his heart, it was going to take a scalpel to carve it out.
Respiratory distress, a paramedic called out. We're going to intubate her.
Lance closed his eyes, his mother's words replaying in his head. I don't want to be a burden on you. Had she been afraid another breakdown would be hard on him? The paramedics loaded his mother onto the gurney and wheeled her out. Anger at himself, at the situation, at the fucking world overcame him for a minute. He turned to the wall and let it out. His fist went through the sheetrock. Pain shot through his knuckles, dissipating his rage. Sharp grabbed his hand and examined it.
Good thing you didn't hit a stud.
His knuckles were scraped, but the damage was minor. Sharp lifted Lance's keys from his hand.
I'm driving.
Lance didn't argue. They went outside. He climbed into the passenger seat and stared at the swirling red ambulance lights all the way to the hospital. The ambulance pulled into the ER bay.
You should call Morgan.
Sharp parked the car in the emergency lot. Lance shook his head.
Not yet. May as well wait until we find out how she is. Morgan would want to know. She'd want to be here.
Lance checked the time. 7 o'clock. He pictured Morgan sitting on the closed lid of the toilet supervising bath time, then curling up with the kids to read bedtime stories.
There's nothing she can do right now. I'll call her as soon as I know something.
The only thing to do was wait. Chapter 27. Morgan paced the living room. Picturing the nasty photos and message, she didn't know whether to be terrified or furious. Both worked, she decided.
Stella took the photographs to the fingerprint examiner,
Grandpa said.
She'll call when she has some information.
There won't be fingerprints. Morgan's stalker was far too clever. Her blood iced over when she thought of him parked on her street, using a telephoto lens to take pictures of her hugging her kids.
We're safe here.
Grandpa tapped the blanket on his lap. He'd stashed his own handgun under it.
We're both armed. We have an excellent security system, and Rocket will let us know if anyone's outside.
She took a deep breath. Grandpa was right. Her sister had also arranged for patrol units to drive past the house during the night.
On another note, I finished reviewing Sharp's file on Vic Krueger's disappearance,
Grandpa said.
He crossed every T and dotted every I.
Grandpa frowned.
I can't think of any other leads he could have chased at the time.
Thanks for trying.
I'm happy to be useful. I wish I could have helped more.
Grandpa rolled himself away from the table.
I'll be in my room.
I'm going to bed too. Good night. Morgan set her gun on top of her armoire, out of reach of the children. Then she put on her pajama bottoms and an old t-shirt and got into bed. She was still staring at the ceiling when her phone buzzed. She grabbed it from the table, hoping it was an update from Lance. Snoozer and Rocket stirred, then went back to sleep. But Sharp's number displayed on the screen. She answered. Yes?
Did he call you?
Sharp asked. No. Morgan sat up, her heart tight. What did Abigail say?
We didn't make it to the motel.
Sharp's voice lifted goosebumps on Morgan's skin. What happened?
Jenny tried to kill herself.
Sharp's voice broke.
She took a whole bunch of pills.
No. Disbelief rolled through her for a few seconds. Then Morgan jumped out of bed, stripped off her pajamas, and stepped into a pair of jeans. Is Lance at the hospital? She shoved her feet into the old sneakers she kept by the bed for middle-of-the-night dog walks.
No, he went home to get some sleep. Jenny's on a ventilator, and it'll likely take several days for the drugs to clear her system. The nurses told him to save his strength for when she wakes up. They don't know about permanent organ or brain damage yet.
Oh, no. Is he all right? Morgan asked.
He said he wanted to be alone, but I think he's in shock.
Sharp sighed hard.
He needs you.
Under her concern, disappointment raced through her. He didn't call me. I'm on my way. Morgan ended the call, then phoned her sister. Stella agreed to come right over. She was at the door in 10 minutes. Mac waited in the car and followed her to Lance's house. It was just past midnight when Morgan arrived. She heard the piano from the front stoop, the despondent melody wrenching her heart. Lance's version of Hurt was more Johnny Cash than Nine Inch Nails. Tonight, emotion lent gravel to his voice that sent a chill up Morgan's arms. She let herself in with her key. Sadness filled the house as fully as the music. Morgan went to the dining room where his grand piano stood in place of a table. He played, a glass of whiskey perched above the keyboard. Sharp called me. She slid onto the piano bench next to him. I wish you had. He stopped playing. His hands hovered over the keys, his fingers quivering as if he couldn't find the right notes.
I know. And I'm sorry. I'm not thinking straight.
She wrapped an arm around his broad shoulders, her heart breaking for him. That's okay. With his gaze fixed on the keyboard, Lance shook his head.
I can't even process what happened tonight.
Grief emanated from him, as poignant as the song he'd just played. A sigh rolled through his frame. He breathed again, his chest expanding with painful effort.
I'm used to handling my disasters alone. You have so much on your plate already.
Is our relationship that one-sided? If that's true, then I'm the one who should be apologizing to you. He glanced at her, his brows dropping in confusion.
I don't understand. You and your girls deserve someone who can make you a priority in his life.
I know you don't get it, and that's the problem. Morgan searched for the right words. I don't need to be ranked in your life. There's no need to queue loved ones in order of importance. People all have different needs at different times. I know that you're used to going it mostly alone, but that's not the best way. He took a small sip of his whiskey. You help me all the time, she said. You protect me and my family. You welcomed me and my girls and my nanny into your home when we needed a place to stay. You helped my grandfather shower last week. Her voice rose, frustration undoing her, and she took two breaths to get it under control. But you resist letting us help you. Why?
You've already been through so much. You deserve happiness.
How could she get through to him?
You must not think very much of me.
He lifted his head. Confusion cut through the grief in his eyes.
What?
Do you think I could just walk away from you because you're having a personal crisis? That I'm the kind of person who could turn her back on you because, for a change, you need me? He looked away. His hands curled into fists and landed on the keyboard with a soft cacophony of notes. And if you think you're being all manly and saying you don't need help, don't bother, she said. The question was rhetorical. How could she make him understand? He seemed beyond words, almost in shock. But if there was one thing she understood, it was grief. That dark place that had sucked her in for 2 years. The numbness. The hollow, empty pressure that had eaten her alive from the inside out. She couldn't let it drown him the way that it had held her under. There had been times she hadn't been able to take a deep breath. But how? He wouldn't even hold eye contact with her. Morgan turned on the piano bench to face him. Sliding one leg over his, she straddled his lap. I'm not going anywhere. His hand settled lightly on her hips, and he leaned back, almost wearily, putting as much space between them as their positions would allow. She settled on his thighs, looped her hands around his neck and looked down at him. The agony that sharpened his face tore at her.
Morgan.
His voice was harsh, as if he had a hard time speaking.
Shh.
She kissed him lightly on the temple. When she straightened, his eyes were closed, his jaw tight with restraint. His lids opened, revealing blue eyes filled with pain and doubt.
I don't know what you want from me.
Absolutely nothing, she said. Because it's my turn.
You don't have to do this.
He shook his head. Since you seem to be a little confused about the mechanics of a relationship, I'm gonna lay it out for you straight. No bullshit. She caught and held his gaze. A successful adult relationship requires support and sharing on both sides. It's not a one-way street, where one person does all the giving and the other does all the taking. He blinked, his gaze dropping. She took his face in her hands and lifted his chin, but still he wouldn't look at her. I love you, her eyes filled with tears. She'd wanted the first time she'd said the words to be a romantic moment, but he needed to hear them now. His gaze snapped back to hers. She slid her thumbs along his square jaw, her hands cupping it, the stubble rough in her palms. The strength in him amazed her. How had he coped all these years with only one close personal relationship? Sharp was the only person Lance had allowed into his pain, probably because Sharp had been a part of it from the beginning, when Lance had been too young to push him away. And knowing Sharp, he would have bulldozed his way past any walls Lance would have put up. Her words didn't seem to sink in, so she said them again, her heart warming. She meant it when she'd said she wasn't letting him go. I love you. And not to be conceited or anything, I'm fairly sure you feel the same way. A few months ago, I didn't think I'd ever be happy again. I didn't think it was possible to find love a second time. But I did. With you. His eyes misted. His grip on her waist tightened. But she wasn't finished. This incredible man had accepted the chaos of her family. He'd banished the darkness from her soul and shown her the light of a brand new day. You listen to me, mister. There is no way in hell I'm letting you go. You're stuck with me. Whatever problems either of us face, we'll deal with them. Together, have I made myself clear? Lance swallowed, the muscles of his neck working hard. He cleared his throat.
I don't know what to say.
You don't have to say anything.
She pressed her mouth to his, pouring her heart into this kiss. Despite her position, she didn't intend the kiss to be sexual. She just wanted to command his attention, to make contact, to warm what was a soul deep and bitter cold. She lifted her head, her hands sliding down to rest on his shoulders. Had she gotten through to him?
Chapter 28. Lance's breath trembled in his chest. She broke him. Every word, every kiss, every caress battered him down until the barrier he'd spent decades building around his heart shattered into a thousand pieces, like a block of ice dropped from a 10-story building. She pressed her lips to his jaw, sliding them along his cheek, finding his mouth again. And once his defenses were gone, there was no containing the flood of emotions that had been safely walled behind them. Staring into her determined eyes, he was struck dumb by her sheer perfection. Her intelligence and strength and generosity. The way she loved with full force and didn't accept his bullshit excuses. And the fact that she'd chosen him blew him away. He tucked a lock of her hair behind her ear.
What did I do to deserve you?
A small smile curved one side of her mouth.
You were you.
He kissed her. She leaned back in his arms, her softness yielding to the hardness of his body. But he didn't mistake her soft body or kind heart for weakness. She was the strongest woman, strongest person he'd ever met. Behind the determination in her blue eyes were purple smudges of exhaustion. He scooped her into his arms and carried her to his bedroom. He lay her gently on the bed and stretched out alongside her.
Are you sure you want to deal with the chaos of my life?
I thought I'd made myself clear.
Crystal, just making sure.
Despite the horror of the last few days, a smile pulled at his mouth. His hand skimmed the feminine curve of her hip. He'd been waiting to tell her he loved her. His excuses included not wanting to overwhelm her or scare her off. Now he realized he'd been protecting his own heart, in fear that she didn't return his love, waiting for her to say it first. He'd rather face bullets than lose her. But no more being an emotional coward for him, she deserved better. He brought her hand to his lips.
I love you. Heart and soul, body and spirit, and any other stupid "you complete me" cliche you can think of.
She took his hand and interlaced their fingers,
then we'll get through this together.
I don't know how I ever thought I could do it alone.
He'd been an idiot. She'd given him some of her strength. He felt like a starved man who'd accidentally stumbled into a buffet. Do you want to talk about it? She brushed her fingertips along his temple.
Not now.
He rolled to his back. Morgan leaned on his chest, again forcing contact with him when his instinct was to pull away. He was going to have to break that habit. Now I have something to tell you, Morgan said. When I got home tonight, there was a package waiting for me. The story she told him wiped away the numbness and replaced it with raging fire.
I want to find Tyler Green and beat him senseless.
He stuffed a pillow behind his shoulders and looked her in the eyes. We can't do that. She lay her head on his chest and spread her fingers over his heart. We're not even positive that it's him. But Lance disagreed.
Tyler is a scumbag. He already assaulted you. He deserves a good beating.
Now you sound like Sheriff King, going rogue and dispensing your own brand of justice.
That's not a flattering comparison.
But it's a fair one, Morgan said. Our legal system might not be perfect, but we need to work within its framework. You cannot punish a man if you have no real evidence he's guilty. Lance snorted. She was right. But he didn't like feeling helpless. He wanted to slay all the dragons for Morgan. Everyone is protected for now, and Stella is working on identifying my stalker. The best thing we can do tonight is put it out of our minds and try to get a few hours of sleep. But Lance stared at the ceiling, unable to think of anything else. He was certain of only one thing. He would not let her out of his sight until he'd dealt with Tyler.
Chapter 29. Sharp stepped into Jenny's house. A dark blue sedan pulled up to the curb. Stella and her partner, Detective Brody McNamara, climbed out and hurried up the walk. Sharp held the door open for them. Brody crossed the threshold.
Heard you were shot tonight. You all right?
It was minor.
Sharp lied. His arm was killing him. The stitches on fire and pulling with every movement. But urgency kept him going.
Thanks for coming.
He went through to the bedroom. Stella and Brody followed him.
What can we do?
Stella asked. Medical paraphernalia littered the carpet. His mind's eye replayed the horror of the evening. The paramedics working on Jenny, Lance standing just behind them, his hands linked and pressed to the top of his head, his eyes lost, his heart broken. Sharp pushed away the pity.
Something is wrong here,
he said. Stella and her partner exchanged a look. Sharp raised his hands.
I know I'm too close to the case to be objective, which is why I ask you to come. But I know Jenny.
He could feel it, a puzzle piece that didn't quite fit. His instincts were waving a frigging red flag at him.
What did I miss? Two people involved in this case have died this week,
Sharp said.
One appeared to be a robbery. The other looked like a suicide. Jenny would be number three. Coincidences give me hives.
That's why we're here. Stella reached into the pocket of her black jacket for a pair of purple nitrile gloves. Someone sent my sister threatening photos yesterday afternoon.
What?
Sharp asked. Stella told him about Morgan's package. It seems whoever left the box knew about the security cameras at the house. They left it on the neighbor's porch in the afternoon when no one was home.
That's smart.
Sharp said.
Do you think it's Tyler Green?
We're going to talk to him in the morning, Stella said. I just thought you should know.
Thanks.
Sharp sighed.
Keep me updated.
Will do. Stella pivoted, taking the room in. Now, let's find out what happened to Jenny. There was nothing to suggest this was anything other than a suicide attempt, but they'd come at his request. Brody gloved up too.
Tell us about her.
They knew her basic stats. Sharp needed to fill in the personal information. Sharp rambled on about Jenny's issues as he scanned the room, trying to see the evidence with fresh eyes.
Jenny keeps a strict routine to her days. She used to be a hoarder, but now she overcompensates with OCD neatness.
Her bed was made. Two cats slept in the center of the comforter. The nightstand and dresser were tidy as always, no clutter in sight. It was as if having one item out of place would put her at risk for free-falling back into chaos. Sharp wandered to the bathroom doorway.
There were two prescription bottles in the sink, both empty. The paramedics took them to the hospital with her.
Why the sink? Sharp pulled on a pair of gloves. With the edge of a finger, he opened the medicine cabinet. Personal products stood in neat rows. Brody walked up behind him.
They're in alphabetical order,
Brody said over Sharp's shoulder.
I told you she has OCD tendencies,
Sharp said.
Why would she drop her empty bottles in the sink? The trash can's right there.
He pointed to the waste paper basket tucked between the vanity and toilet.
And I don't see a cup in here. If she took the pills in the bathroom, she would have needed water.
Maybe she took the glass to the kitchen, Stella suggested.
But we found her on the bathroom floor, and if she had time to go to the kitchen and back, why didn't she throw away the pill bottles? For that matter, why didn't she go lie down in bed?
She could have returned to the bathroom because she felt sick. Stella opened the three vanity drawers and checked the cabinet under the sink. She crouched and looked through the trash and the can. Frowning, she straightened. I'm not sure what I'm looking for.
Me either.
Sharp left the bathroom.
But every time I've seen Jenny lose it, she wasn't cognizant enough to plan a suicide. She was incoherent, wild. Her eyes were dazed and glazed, utterly terrified beyond comprehension. She'd literally crawl into her closet.
But you don't know what she was like before she hid, Stella asked. Or how long the attack lasted before she took action. Or if this time was completely different.
Good point. No,
he admitted.
But in the early days of her illness, there was a great deal of trial and error with medications. Lately, things have been better. What were her triggers?
Brody opened the closet. Jenny's clothes were sorted by type and color. They hung in their usual evenly spaced order. There was no sign that she'd moved anything aside to make a hiding place.
Once it was the loss of electricity during a winter storm,
Sharp said.
The schools closed, Lance came home early and found her in the closet in an almost catatonic state. He was 12.
Lance had stayed with Sharp until Jenny got out of the hospital a week later. Then Sharp had installed a generator in their house so that would never happen again.
About a year later, she had another episode, when Lance was 2 hours late coming home from hockey practice. Another parent was giving him a ride, the car broke down, and they had to wait for a tow truck. Jenny had convinced herself that he was dead.
She'd called Sharp and he'd found Lance and brought him home, but by then she'd been too far gone.
She hasn't had an episode like that for a long time. The doctor said that fluctuating hormones had made her medications hard to balance. The last 10 years she's been more stable. Not normal, but stable. But she was upset by the discovery of her husband's car this week,
Brody said.
Yes.
Sharp followed Stella and Brody into the kitchen.
But she was taking the news better than I expected.
Sharp scanned the kitchen.
That chair pulled away from the table is very unlike Jenny. She likes everything in its place.
He went to the sink. Empty. Sharp opened the dishwasher, his focus zooming in on two dessert plates standing on the upper rack.
This is wrong.
Stella came to stand next to him. What? Sharp pointed.
Jenny would never put a dish on the top rack, only glasses and mugs. Do you think someone else was here?
Brody asked.
Yes,
Sharp said.
That's exactly how it feels.
There were too many little things out of place. Excitement hummed through Sharp's veins. No matter how upset Jenny was, she would never, ever change the way she loaded the dishwasher. Would Jenny let a stranger into her house? Stella asked.
I don't think so,
Sharp said.
But I can't be sure.
Does she run her dishwasher every day? Stella asked.
Yes,
Sharp said.
Without fail.
Stella pointed to the interior. I see two coffee cups on the top rack. She lifted a cup and turned it over. Dried coffee residue was stuck to the bottom of the cup. Sharp peered over her shoulder.
Jenny thoroughly washes her dishes before they go into the machine. Someone else put those cups in here.
Let's bag these cups as evidence, Stella said.
Since there are two dessert dishes here as well,
Sharp said,
it's possible she had company. We'll take the plates as well,
Brody said from across the room. Sharp went to the refrigerator and opened it. There was nothing unusual inside. Brody went to the garbage can and stepped on the foot pedal.
There are pie scrapings in the trash. Looks like a whole slice. Pie is Jenny's favorite food. Why would she cut herself a slice and then throw it away?
Sharp asked.
And for that matter, where's the pie? I don't remember if Lance brought her one this week, but if he did, the box should be on the counter or in the trash. No box in the trash,
Brody said. I'll go check the garbage can outside. Stella took a small flashlight from her jacket pocket and walked out of the kitchen. She returned a few minutes later. No pie box.
So where did it go?
Sharp asked. Brody scanned the kitchen.
Maybe her guest brought it and took it away. The whole thing just doesn't feel right.
Sharp's wound ached. He stuck his hand in his jacket pocket to give his arm a rest.
Jenny doesn't get visitors. Staging a suicide is very unlikely, but then so is having two back-to-back suicides related to the same case.
Brody's gaze roamed the room before returning to Sharp's face.
But if you're right, then she's in danger.
Sharp finished. He knew he was right. He knew Jenny better than anyone else, maybe even better than Lance did. She clung to her routine like a rock climber dug into handholds, as if letting go of any small part of her routine would send her plummeting into another downward spiral. The more anxious she was, the more she would insist on following her rituals.
Let's get a forensic team in here,
Brody said.
I want the house printed. We'll get the cups, plates, and pie scrapings tested.
We should also get the doctors to run a full drug panel, Stella said, in case she was given something other than her own prescriptions.
I need to get someone into her room to protect her.
Sharp froze.
Can you spare an officer?
Brody shook his head.
There's no way the chief would approve putting a guard on Jenny. We don't have any real evidence this was a crime, and the hospital will be watching her closely in the ICU. Not closely enough.
Sharp paced across the small room and back.
I wish I could be in two places at once. Give me a minute. Let me see what I can do.
Brody took out his phone and stepped into the next room. He came back in 2 minutes.
Hannah will go right over to the hospital and stay with Jenny. Hannah?
Sharp asked.
Is she a cop?
Brody shook his head.
No, Anna Barrett is my girlfriend. She's a lawyer. But she had a unique upbringing. I promise you, no one will get past Hannah. She will keep Jenny safe.
Why would someone try to kill Jenny? Stella asked.
There's only one reason I can think of,
Sharp said.
It must be related to Victor's disappearance. She must know something.
Chapter 30. She wasn't dead. How could he have miscalculated? He'd estimated her body weight, he'd counted the pills and crushed them into powder, then mixed some into her coffee and some into her pie. He'd even added a shot of heroin to her pie for good measure. He'd been worried she'd taste the drugs, but she'd eaten every bit. He'd rinsed the damn plate and put it in the dishwasher himself. She should not have survived. How was she still alive? Tugging his baseball cap lower on his forehead, he slipped into the secure ICU wing with another visitor, falling into step beside him. He lowered his chin, hunched his shoulders, and averted his face from the ceiling-mounted cameras. The ICU hallway bustled with bodies. Gathered around a doorway marked with the number 3, nurses and doctors suited up as if they were going to Mars. Full body gowns, face shields, double gloves. An alarm clanged. The light above the door flashed. Doctors shouted orders, more than a dozen medical personnel crowded the fishbowl room, He kept walking, kept his